All right. Well, we are back with the podcast here. I say we when it's actually just me. Today we have our first female guest on the podcast, as well as our first worldwide celebrity seen on the Major League Baseball Network, former sideline reporter for the Milwaukee Brewers, Trini Kuznarek. Just a quick note, I'm actually recording this after I talked to Trini, and at some points in the podcast, you'll hear sometimes she overlaps me. That's just a problem with the sound quality, my stupid recording thing. So hopefully it doesn't bug you too much. Otherwise, I think it's a good interview, and let's get to it right now. All right, Trini, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Today must have been a very emotional day for you, you know, with the big memorial service and everything.
Oh, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to lie. I cried. I teared up during Brooke Shields. I did. I teared up during Brooke Shields. I got a little emotional during We Are the World. When the Britain's Got Talent kid sang, I was like taken aback. And then at the end, the little kid Paris, are you kidding me? Tugged at the heartstrings. I loved my daddy. He was a great dad. And she's crying. And you're thinking, God, you know, this guy might have been a great talent and a freak show combined, but you know, he did leave behind three kids who are now fatherless. I thought out of everything they did, at all the MJ over the top, just ridiculous amount of coverage. I thought yesterday or today, what is today? Tuesday? I thought Tuesday's memorial was the most class. It was the classiest day that they've done so far. You know, it was tasteful. It wasn't over the top. I thought it was like a ridiculous circus of preachers and stuff, but not at all. It was actually really nice.
Well, Reverend Al was there. He tops everything off, Reverend Al. But
yeah, but take Reverend Al out of it. It was a decent ceremony.
Honest to God, this is an actual headline from CNN. The quote: "What are you doing to honor MJ today?" And so that would be my question to you, Trini. What did you do to honor MJ today?
Sorry. Well, besides, you know, dying of some sort of weird chest cold, my neighbor across the hall was blasting Beat It about 20 minutes ago. You know, that's so sad. I didn't do anything specific today. Like, I should have worn a glove to work. Or
yes, the one glove. Show solidarity. The one glove. I think you should have done it.
I should have. I did not. I will say, on the day after he passed, I did immediately download about $20 worth of Michael Jackson music from iTunes, and promptly put together an MJ mix on my iPod, and I made a copy for my boyfriend. So it has been passed on, and I put it on a black mournful CD. So I guess that would be my. I contributed to his wealth in his passing. Even in death, he's making money off of me via iTunes.
They're going to figure out how to divvy that all up. I think half of that goes to his monkeys.
And his kids. Monkeys and kids. Yeah, isn't that where it all goes?
Yeah, I think so. So here's what fascinates me by the whole thing. It's like he spends almost in his entire adulthood kind of running away from the black community. And then finally when he dies, they're the ones that are there for him, which I think is fantastic that they're so forgiving in all this. But I kind of have the feeling, strangely, that they may be just a little bit too forgiving in this instance.
Well, like, you know, it's funny you bring that up. The woman who does our makeup at work, not just my makeup, it's not like I have a personal person or anything. She was helping me today figure out how to do my makeup for the wedding this weekend, and we're watching this, and she's like, you know what gets me? She's like, here's a guy who tried his darndest to be white his whole life, and yet they're talking about his impact in the black community. And really, and it's not that he didn't have a tremendous impact, I think, on the musical community, but I would question his direct impact on, like when Kobe Bryant was saying, if it wasn't for Michael Jackson, I wouldn't be where I am today. No, I agree if he would say that about Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson, but Michael, like, sometimes I felt like a little bit of the tributes were a little far-fetched and a little reached for. I really don't think this guy inspired Kobe Bryant, unless Kobe Bryant, you know, on the side is making pop music and doing the moonwalk, and I'm not aware of it.
If a white guy had done this, the quote-unquote white community would throw him under the bus immediately. Like, if people found out like Jerry Seinfeld was sleeping with little boys or something, people would be like, "Ah, Jerry Seinfeld, never heard of him. I have no idea who he was. Never watched a show."
I don't know if I totally agree with that either. I think celebrity as a whole gets excused for a lot. I mean, okay, let's take, for instance, now Britney Spears hasn't been exactly accused of any sort of child molestation, but she is skunked out crazy. She's crazy. She shaves her head. She drives with her kids on her lap. She speaks with a southern drawl. She gets married like 6 times. And yet, when she came out with her new album, that was the hottest selling album on iTunes. Her shows are selling out. I think that people excuse. I definitely don't think it's an issue of black, white, purple, red, green, whatever. I think it's an issue of we excuse celebrity in this country. Now, this was an average Joe who, like, invented, you know, the Spin-O-Matic or something and was, like, a mild celebrity. They would crucify the guy for being a weird, psycho, crazy, child-molesting stalker and who didn't deserve anything because he wasn't truly famous. The people who are famous in this country get away with a lot.
Vince from Lindsay
Lohan. girl is messed up. You know, she's like 100, minus 100 pounds. She's all over tabloids. Sometimes she's straight. Sometimes she's gay. Sometimes she's normal. Sometimes she's crazy. And yet she's on the cover of every magazine, and people are like scooping it up and buying it to talk about her. It's kind of sad, really.
Do you think anybody actually takes her seriously anymore, though?
No, probably not.
Is she going to work as a serious actress again?
No, probably not.
You heard the story about Vince from ShamWow. He, like, beat up some hooker or something, and so I don't know if his career's over or not. But
oh, my God, we had ShamWow commercials for a long time. It was, like, the only – we laughed. I was talking to Jason Bay in the Red Sox clubhouse when I was in Atlanta. No, not Atlanta, excuse me, D.C., when John Smoltzman is returned to baseball. And I didn't know Jason from our Pirates days, and we're talking, and he's telling me how much he loves the – I'm sorry. swine flu. And we were talking about how much he loves the network and watches it all the time and is really into it. He goes, and I'm so glad to see regular commercials, he said, because I had had enough of ShamWow by about January 15th. Because, you know, when you start in your startup and you're trying to make your name for yourself, big, especially in the economic times we're in, big, big advertisers aren't exactly knocking down your door. But I think it says a lot about the success of our network that now you've got, like, ShamWow. I haven't seen a ShamWow commercial in a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's probably because Vince is in prison.
Vince is in prison. We're not allowed to show ShamWow anymore. Now Billy Mays has left us. We're out of infomercials.
I know. Maybe you should just ditch the network and be America's most famous pitcher.
Infomercial sweetheart.
Absolutely. This has got to lead somewhere. These guys are rich beyond their wild. Billy Mays is probably pulling in millions.
Which amazes me.
So let's talk about the network a little bit. First of all, at any point in your
life... The network would kill me if I talked only about Michael Jackson and ShamWow the entire time with you.
Well, you're talking about the network a little bit with ShamWow. But by the way, has anybody in your life, has your nickname ever been The Coos?
Yes. My Rob King, who I used to work with in Pittsburgh, called me Coos. They call my dad... And I call my brother Little Coos and Koozie. So, yes. But most people, my nickname, because last names are, like, more boyish, I think, my roommate from college, we always called Stoop, because that was her last name. But I think, for the most part, a lot of times when you call a girl a nickname, it's off of her first name. And so I'm T-Money, Trendy, you name it, we can come up with something.
Yeah, see, I think, like, if your nickname was The Coos and you were in high school, that would be, like, the coolest nickname. Like, if you were a guy and nicknamed The Coos, you'd be a guy I'd want to go hang out with at Dairy Queen or something. Like, yeah, me, the Duke, and The Coos were down at Dairy Queen.
I don't know if that helped my brother at all in high school.
Yeah?
So I'm not sure.
I'm going to try to make this happen. I'll, like, call Sean Casey or something and get it rolling there.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
All right, so
my nickname right now is Sidney Brady at work, so I'll take it.
How did that come about?
because I'm blonde and I'm the youngest at work. Well, Greg Amsinger is technically younger, but because he has a house, a wife, and a child, he automatically seems way older than I am. So I'm kind of like the little sister, I think, of the newsroom. And I've been mistaken as for an intern twice. So Vaskersen started calling me Cindy Brady one day.
All right, so let's not get into too much detail about the journey to the MLB Network, but you're from Muskego, is that right?
I am. Well, Wind Lake. We got to give Sparkle City some love. My parents' house is actually in Wind Lake. That's where I grew up, but I did go to Muskego High School, yes.
So there's a little time at Oshkosh, and then you finished up at the Harvard of the Midwest, Marquette University.
Yes.
And then I'm skipping over some stuff here, but you were in Pittsburgh for 5 years, and then did sideline reporting for the Brewers for 2 years, is that right?
That is correct. How many years for the Brewers? Just one.
Oh, just one for the Brewers? Okay.
One season. And I want to point out it was the season they went to the playoffs. Coincidence? Maybe.
I think not. No, absolutely not. You show up you get the job, show up in New York, and now you're like the Midwest girl showing up in the big city, and it's like I feel Wednesdays on the WB is going to be all over this, like Midwestern girl in the big city following you around.
Yeah, so you could it would be kind of boring because I don't do much, but you could definitely follow me around here. I make a few trips every day to Tasty, or at least a couple times a week, not every day, but to Tasty Delight for some Frogo frozen yogurt. They call Frogo here in the city, I think. Subway, always an adventure. Today there was a smelly guy in my car, and every person that sat next to him.
Smelly guy on the subway?
Yeah, but this guy was so stinky that even, like, hardened New Yorkers couldn't stand to sit next to him. They'd sit down, and immediately upon their butts hitting the seat, I mean, an open seat on the subway is a hot commodity. Like, nobody wants to have to stand if you don't have to, if it's a longer ride. Every single person got up and moved away. Every single person.
I thought the people were polite there, and some young man would say, please, Ms. Kuznarek, take my seat.
No. Only once. Sometimes they'll offer you a seat if you're old or pregnant. And in the winter, I was wearing this, like, pea coat, and it kind of, for girls who listen to this, it kind of belled out a little bit. And I had a scarf on, and I had, like, something shoved in my pocket. And I just had to happen to be, like, reading a book and, like, kind of resting it because I had, like, a shelf of a mound of scarves and other things. And this guy goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Please take my seat. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. And I'm, like, thinking, why is he offering my seat? And all of a sudden I look down, I'm like, oh, he thinks I'm pregnant.
Then take it. Take it.
I should have taken it, too. But I was like, no, that's okay. And I was so confused. And then I was like, oh, that's right. Chicks here walk so much that they stay skinny everywhere else when they're pregnant except for their bellies. So the fact that I was wearing really, like, skinny leg jeans with, like, boots pulled over them, like, my face was far, like, nothing else on me was swelled. I was like, this guy still thinks I'm preggo. This is awesome. I'm like, so, I'm going to wear this jacket all winter long and rub my belly as though I'm pregnant and be able to sit on the subway all winter long.
Yeah, until you show up on air, like, with your fake belly on and your parents are like, what?
No, we won't do that. We won't frighten them. That's for
ratings. Are you recognized in town? Do people say, hey, I've seen her on TV?
Only twice. Once I was at, like, a rooftop bar on the Upper West Side, and a guy was like, hey, I love the network. I watch it all the time. And then yesterday I was in Central Park watching a friend of mine play softball. And when we were done, she introduced me to a couple of her coworkers. And one of them was like, yeah, I know who she is. I watch her all the time on MLB Network. I'm a huge, I'm a huge baseball fan. But for the most part, like, no one in New York. I mean, there's 8 million people here. And most of the time,
More of a reason people would.
No, more of a reason people don't care. They literally, that's why a lot of, like, real celebrities live here. And by real celebrities, I mean, like, the Jerry Seinfelds, the Tina Fey's, although I think she lives in L.A. now. There's a lot of, like, big-time celebrities. Madonna has a place here, Giselle and Tom Brady, because people just leave them alone. I never see celebrities in the city, but probably because there's not, like, paparazzi or anybody following them around as much. It's, like, a much more subdued existence here. New Yorkers just honestly don't care. I don't think they'd care if I was the president. I think they'd be like, oh, there's Barack. He's raising my taxes. And then they'd be like, but I'm late for a meeting, so I don't care that that's the president. What's up? And keep walking. So, no, not a – I don't really – and we've only been on for, what, 7 months? And I'm a reporter. I'm not – it's not like I'm that person who's on for 4 or 5 hours a night that you really get used to my face. If you're not watching for, like, the 30 seconds that I'm on, I have no idea who I am, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm on a political TV show on Sunday mornings, like, sometimes, and I just happen to morning at the same day that I was going to a Brewers game. And so here I figure, well, shoot, I'm on the same day that I'm going to be at this Brewers game. Like, do I need to wear sunglasses or something? Like, what if people don't like me and they'll show up and just like punch me or something? And, you know, what if people recognize me? So I go to the Brewer game and walk around the concourse once. And I'm like looking around to see if anybody knows who I am. Not a single person. And so I go down and sit in my seat. And whereas I thought I was going to be relieved, I was like, hey, that sucks. And so I got up and I did another lap just to see if anybody recognized me, and I still got nothing, which the moral of the story is that I'm...
That's okay. Being recognized is, you know, it's overrated. You know what? I'll be honest. I've been to two or three Brewers games now at home, and I've been, last year, when I was, like, people expected me to be there. Sorry, swine flu. People expected me to be there. I would get recognized all the time. Now... Because it's like, I think now they're like, whoa, is that Trini? Well, why would she be here? She doesn't live here. She lives in New York. I'm sure she's covering a game this weekend. I've maybe been pulled aside once or twice. I've been pulled aside more in other cities when I'm covering games, and I'm more like in that environment than when I'm just at home. Out of sight, out of mind, Chris.
So no,
out of sight, out of mind. No one even cares anymore.
I'm watching the Brewers play the Mets earlier this year. And the local broadcast, the FSN Wisconsin broadcast, shows Trini Kuznarek in the stands guzzling a beer.
Heck yeah.
With her girlfriend.
Why not? I was rooting for the Brewers.
Exactly. Well, that was my question. I mean, it was back in the days, like the stuffy days, people were like, well, you know, if you're on air, you can't be rooting for specific teams, and you have to be nonpartisan and all this kind of stuff. And so the network has nothing to say about that. They're like,
no,
hey, just go ahead and...
I think that they want us to. I don't think they want us to be fans. I mean, if you're a true lover of baseball, you're a lover of baseball because you grew up rooting for somebody. You know, you grew up either in our instance, it's either you grew up playing for a team like Harold and Barry and Al, Sean Casey, or you grew up playing, or you grew up rooting for a team like me and Hazel and Greg Amsinger and Matt Vespersian. I mean, there is no, when Greg Amsinger's hosting, he's saying, yeah, I grew up in St. Louis. My boy's the Cardinal, you know, and Hazel talks about Toronto, my hometown Toronto Blue Jays, you know, my Boston Red Sox, because she covered the Red Sox for a long time. I mean, there's no, my office, although I don't have much up in my office, the memorabilia that is up is a montage of pictures of the Brewers winning the wild card last year, and my desk sit all five sausages, an homage to Milwaukee. And I'm actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Milwaukee doing a story, a really fun Kenny Mayne type interactive story. I'm going to run the sausage 5K in the morning on the 25th,
nice.
And then I'm going to race in the sausage race at game that night, and we're going to do this whole fun feature on, like, the tradition in Milwaukee and how great it is and how it's a real race, it's not rigged, and I've been told if I don't win, don't come back to the office.
No, I think that's a good rule.
Yeah, I think we're safe. Randall Simon, I believe, is playing in some independent league somewhere.
No, I think so.
I've done the sausage race. Last year I raced the sausage race. Yes.
Oh, you've done it before.
I came in second. It's not an easy task. I was the Polish because I'm Polish.
Which sausage were you? Oh, okay, good. No, you got to be the brat.
Well, I'm not German though. I'm not German.
German man, no.
I don't go yagging.
Fine. Be the Polish.
Yeah, someone tried to convince me to be the chorizo, and I'm like, no way, that's the hardest costume to run in because the hat is so big, the sombrero, and it's like the most top heavy. Yeah. I've been told the easiest costume to run in is the hot dog. But that's why it tends to have the most wins, because it's the least restrictive.
Right. That all makes sense. All right, let's talk about the network some more. First of all, and, you know, I'm not just brown nosing here, but I love the MLB Network. And here are a couple things that I love about it. First of all, other networks are so heavy on the Yanks, Red Sox. Sprinkling some Mets every now and then. But there seems to be a conscious effort on behalf of the MLB Network to kind of spread it around and talk about all the other teams, which I love, because then, you know, obviously teams like the Brewers get a little more love there. So do you think that's a conscious decision?
I won't say what city I was in, but I was in a city covering a story earlier in June, and someone there made a comment that, I think it's still a little East Coast heavy. And not necessarily, they didn't necessarily mean Yankees, Red Sox. They just meant Mets, Phillies, everybody kind of in those Eastern Conference heavy. And I said that at work. I said, hey, I just want you to know there's some teams that aren't in the East that feel like we're still being a little East-centric. And we really took it to heart. Like, they went back to check to see what we were leading games. Like, it's a real emphasis that we are supposed to talk about the Royals just as much as we talk about the Yankees. And if the Royals are playing better than the Yankees, then the Royals lead the show, not the Yankees. It's a huge, huge emphasis that all 30 teams are treated equally. I mean, granted, as you get into the playoff push, that's just not going to be possible.
I remember
we're not going to have as much to say about the Washington Nationals as we are about the New York Mets. Well, the way they're playing, maybe they won't be in the playoffs, but you know what I mean.
There was a couple years ago when there was like a Brewer Day game, and maybe like Prince Fielder hit a walk-off homer, or something crazy happened during the Brewer game, and so I turn on ESPN to watch, to see what led, and it's like, Roger Clemens makes a rehab start in AAA or something when he's coming back from injury or something, or from his, like one of the seasons.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes a lot of the hotels that I stay in, I don't get MLB Network, so I have to watch Baseball Tonight, and I still watch SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight anyway, because you want to see there are competitions, so you definitely want to see what they're doing, and there's some things that they do, I think, still very, very well, and I'm still frustrated sometimes, like when I want to see NL Central highlights, or I want to see a game that, you know, we kind of thought was a big game or a big deal, and you don't see it, it gets buried. And I will say that when you live and work on the East Coast, it is easy, it's very easy to get caught up in, there's so many people that are fans of East Coast teams, because so many of the people that work in production and at the networks are East Coast born and raised, I think there's a natural bias within those people. You know, I think if MLB Network was based in Chicago instead of New York, you'd see automatically more of an emphasis on Chicago, Minnesota, because you're going to have, you know, and most, you know, your talent, your anchors come from all over, because you're just plucking the best, or, you know, who you think are the best or markets all over. But when it comes to your PA, your production assistants, your producers, your runners, your editors, they're all local, because it's not like, you know, you're not exactly paying them top dollar to do the grunt work. And so they're the ones who are kind of in on the decision making, and they're all from that area. So if you're based out of Chicago, you're probably going to have 70% of your fans are going to be Brewers, you know, Twins, Cubs, Sox, Cards fans. Well, if you're based in Secaucus, New Jersey, most of our fans are Yankees and Mets fans, with a smattering of some Red Sox fans, you know, some Dodger fans, and even just a couple of Detroit fans, a couple of Reds fans, obviously a Brewers fan, too, in me and Tlesak. So I think that's sometimes why you see that East Coast centric, because all the networks are based on the East Coast, so a lot of people working there are East Coast based originally.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of it just has to do with the times that the games are on. I mean, most of the people are watching during a time where a lot of the East Coast games are on, and you know, they don't stay up late for the.
But there's only an hour difference. I mean, if you think about it, I would say 90% of the games take place. They start East Coast time 7 or 8 p.m. So they either start, you know, they're starting at either 6 o'clock Central or 7 o'clock Central. You know, 90% of the games take place in those two time zones. So I can kind of understand the Western teams sometimes falling by the wayside due to time constraints and time zone differences. But you can't really say that about the good teams in the middle of the country, because that's, to me, an hour isn't enough of a difference. You know, I think if the Cubs, I think, you know, when the Cubs were struggling, I think they were largely ignored on it. I think their struggles were largely ignored on a national scale. you were like loving every second of it, but
I loved it.
But I think it's easy sometimes, again, when it's not at the forefront, because fans, I think, are passionate, and the people who work at these networks are passionate sports fans. And if you're not passionate about something, you may not be the first person to bring it up in a meeting.
Yeah. Here's what I also love. I love that you guys snagged Bob Costas, because I just love him, and I think he's wonderful. And he seems to take a lot of heat from people, which I don't understand. There was a big article in the New York Times Play magazine, which doesn't even exist anymore, but kind of ripping him. And I'm just like, I loved him when he did the nationwide.
Yeah, it was a while ago, but yeah.
I think it was on NBC back in the day. And I've loved I read his book. I've loved everything that he's done. And the thing that I love most about him is his hair color, because I feel like he's given me credit as a viewer, because he leaves a little bit of gray right around the ears. So he's like, he's saying to you, look, I know I'm getting up there, but, you know, I'm not going to go full on hair coloring like a guy like Tom Verducci, who's a good looking guy, but, you know, he's got a couple years before he's got to start letting it go, I think.
On men's hair coloring, I did tease Vasgersian the other day. He made fun of me for something I was wearing, and I said, whatever, at least I'm not losing my hair. And that shut him up pretty quickly.
Wow.
You know, I don't know. With Bob Costas, it's not his hair coloring that I've noticed, although I will look closer next time we are in makeup together. What strikes me as most impressive about Bob is he is so utterly prepared for everything he does, and he's so well-versed on the history of the game and on his timely, like, important topics, like the issue of steroids and what's taking place to hurt the image of the game. Like, when he did the sit-down interview with Joe Torre and Tom Verducci when that book came out, he had just come back from, and I want to say, and I think he had just done the Kentucky Derby. And in his hotel room, you know, in the depths of the night, in between the Kentucky Derby and getting back to Secaucus, it might not have been the Derby, but it was some major, major sporting event. In between running back and forth between all these things, he had read the book from cover to cover so that he was prepared for it. And I actually pick Bob's brain a lot, as much as I can before he gets really annoyed with me, about how he prepares for stuff and how he goes about asking questions and how he became a good interviewer. And it's actually really fascinating. And he's just a really intelligent, intelligent guy. And, you know, I think anyone who's in the public eye to that degree is going to face criticism. I don't know. Do you remember Jerry Tass? Remember him? He was the anchor at Channel 12 forever. Jerry once said to me something I will never, ever, ever forget. And as being, you know, an on-air personality in television, he said, 50% of the people will love you, 50% of the people will hate you, but all that matters is 100% of the people know who you are. And I was like that. You know, he's like, you can't concern yourself with the people that don't like you, because even if you go out and do your job, what you feel is perfect every day, there's going to be detractors, and there's going to be people who are critics of yours. You just got to go out and go to bed each night knowing that you did the best you could do.
Well, Costas hosts that, it's a show, I guess it's on, is it on Sunday nights, Monday nights? And he had one where he sat down.
Bruce Fleming was on that one. It was tremendous.
Honest to God, if it had been anybody else interviewing those guys, I absolutely wouldn't have watched. But when he sits down with these guys, you know it's going to go into the history of the game, and it's going to be detailed, and it's going to be well run.
And I
so,
think,
you know,
like,
enjoyed every second
at his level, that, you know, he's been around the game for so long, and it's so well known, his love and knowledge of baseball, that he's so well respected. You know, interviews that, you know, I can't get, or even like Matt or Harold or someone can't get at work, Bob can get those interviews because he's established himself, you know, which is why I pick his brain so often, because I hope one day to be that person that when someone wants to talk, they're like, oh, I'll talk to her, but I won't talk to anybody else. You can only hope to become that well-respected in the business.
All right, so here's the only, like, even moderately tough question I'm going to give you, and it deals with the network. It seems strange to me, and probably a lot of people, how, you know, if you're essentially run by the MLB, how you can kind of delve into some of the more controversial issues relating to the MLB. Like, I mean, you don't hear the word steroids on your air a whole lot. Although I give you credit, when you were interviewing Tim Wallach, I saw that
Yanni
Ramirez is the AAA or the minor league manager with the Albuquerque Isotopes, and you know he's kind of going on. And you're a little bit like, you know, he was using PEDs. He injected that. It's like, you know, he's not here on vacation. He's here for a reason. But you know, for example, Danny Johnson breaks. You know, he wins his 300th game, and you know, on the air, everybody's kind of going on about how great he is, and certainly, you know, it's great. But there wasn't even any mention whatsoever that, you know, the record books might be a little iffy these days, or you know, just some sort of.
Well, I think you have to be careful. I think you have to be careful, and I think I know you're going like, why wouldn't you at least bring it up? But
yeah.
I think that the philosophy of the network is we're not there to be tabloid, and I don't think this should be a philosophy of any network. You're not there to be TMZ. You're not there to be tabloid journalists. You're not there to say, you know, if it was Roger Clemens at this point reaching something at all the accusations against him, then yes, I believe it probably would come up in conversation, just as it's come up with players like Manny and Alex Rodriguez. But Randy Johnson, for the most part, hasn't really been mentioned in those discussions. So what he's done, to the best of our knowledge, is untainted. So why taint such a great accomplishment by bringing something negative up? I think one problem in the media is you constantly search the negative. Like, you can't just take an incredible accomplishment and enjoy it for what it is. And what Randy Johnson did probably will not be repeated again. I mean, I don't even know. I'm trying to think who the next closest is to reaching those 300 wins. And it's such a...
Yeah, it would be right. It'd have to be somebody like Roy Halladay.
Way far off, and with the way, you know, with the way things go now, with injuries and contracts and just the, you know, longevity in the business, which, you know, in some instances is much longer than it ever was with players like Jamie Moyer, John Smoltz, and Randy Johnson. At other times, you know, we see guys' careers end so quickly, like a Kerry Wood or a Mark Pryor. Not to use two cogs, they just were the first to come to mind. So I think, you know, that's why we didn't bring it up. It's not because we're not aware that the record books are different now, but I also think that the record he set is probably, and the names he stands with are less controversial than, say, the home run record. I think that one will always forever now be linked with steroids. But the wins... That one, I just don't think that at that time was probably an appropriate conversation to have. So, I mean, I think the network encourages us to ask the appropriate questions, to not back down, to be, you know, if we're in a position of being journalists, like I am often in the field, you know, they don't expect us to sugarcoat anything or softball anything. And I mean, when I was in San Diego when Manny returned, you know, I asked Manny, you know, did he have an apology to make to his fans? You know, we talked to Larry Boa. Larry Boa was very open, saying, listen, we're not condoning what Manny did. You know, we're welcoming him back, but we're welcoming back realizing why he was gone. So I don't think we're skirting the issues, but I think I don't think there's a necessity to bring it up at all points and bog down the sport with a few, all right, more than a few bad apples.
Well, I do think Roger Clemens.
If the roles had been reversed and that was Roger Clemens and it happened on the same time frame, I think absolutely, as you would be ludicrous as a network not to bring up the fact that there is going to be an asterisk next to his name because, you know, he is so all over the you know, being interviewed by the feds and being, you know, Congress talking to him and all the accusations from what Andy Pettit has said to Robert McNamara. I always get McNamee. I should know this guy's name by heart, but I feel like I've mentally blocked it out a little bit.
McNamee.
Brian and McNamee. I mean, the trainer that was working all those accusations against him. Then I think you absolutely have to bring it up. But, you know, Randy Johnson, Even the list, I was thinking of the list that was leaked, you know, the supposed 103 names that turned out to be nothing. I mean, his name wasn't even on that. So why, I guess my thought is, why ruin his day and what he's done? Because if he did it untainted, he deserves that day to be untainted. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but.
No, I'm not accusing him of anything, but it just seems like that would be something that, you know, in bars people would be talking about. Well, you know, how valid.
I think if anything, if he has done nothing, like, I think his, you know, number is more valid. Because if he has done nothing, then what he has done, he's done it in the steroid era against guys
who have been
using and facing him. So what he's done is even that more extraordinary. And I think that's probably, again, I think that's why it wasn't brought up.
Speaking of Clemens, by the way, and I just read this. I just read the book. Was it Daily News? The four people. Was it the New York Daily News?
I believe so. I'm not gonna lie. I've been a little
out.
When you travel coast to coast all the time, you get a little out of the loop a little bit on daily because I don't have a chance to pick up the awesome New York newspapers on a daily basis. But I believe so. Yes. I mean, I love going back to Michael Jackson really quickly.
I had to buy the New York Post
the day after he died because this, I kid you not, is the front page. All it is a picture of Jacko and a big title across the bottom, dead. That's it. Nothing else. Dead. I was like, I have to buy this because only in New York would some poor guy die of cardiac arrest and the headline is dead.
This is mainly just because I read about Clemens, and by all accounts, he's kind of a world-class dirtbag, and it was when he was playing. Now, for the record, you are not either condoning or affirming what.
I don't know him. Honestly, I kind of hold judgment until I've actually met him. I've never met, never interviewed, so I do not know of his, personal, what he's like personally.
Yeah, if you believe the book. And it's pretty well known, you know, he was dating this country music singer, Mindy McCready, and flying her around when she was 15 years old.
Come on. Dating younger people is totally cool.
Anyway, have there been situations where you have to interview a player or something and you kind of know that they might be a dirtbag and it kind of it affects
you
cover them?
I don't think you can.
You
know, I think at the end of the day, if I'm going in and doing my job – you know, even if I think a guy's a jerk or he's cheating on his wife, you know, or he hits his kids, if that's not what I'm talking to him about, then that's not – if I'm just strictly talking to someone who's in the – you know, and I'm not saying that Alex Rodriguez is a dirtbag. I'm just using him as an example because he's always in the tabloids. You know, maybe A-Rod – you know, I don't know the extent to which A-Rod cheated on his wife or whatever he did. But, you know, 2 years ago when those accusations are coming out, if I've got to go in and talk to him about how he's playing, I can't worry about what kind of person he is. Like, it's not my job to police what kind of father and husband you are, you know, or person you are. It's my job to go in. I'm probably not going to chat you up. I'm probably not going to, you know, ask what your favorite restaurant is and do you have any suggestions for post-game, you know, brewskis. But it can't affect, I mean, you know, we work in a business and we live in a world of politicians, businessmen, athletes, everybody's got something. And unless, to me, my, and this is even what I told players that I've spoken with, and, you know, in what I do, I've seen, you know, you've seen your fair share of people doing things out and about that they probably shouldn't be doing. And then they see you and they panic and they think you're going to talk about it. My whole thing is, unless it becomes a legal matter and I have to ask you about it, my job isn't to report on what you do off the field and away from what you're doing. My job is to report the news you make on the field. Now, if what you do off the field, i.e. steroids, drunk driving, drugs, abuse, anything that becomes a criminal case, anything that puts you in legal trouble in baseball and it affects what you do on the field, then it becomes my business to ask you about it because it's affecting your job and what I cover is your job. But, you know, if you've got a wife in New York and a girlfriend in Miami and I happen to meet, you know, one or the other 1 week and the other the next week, hey, you know what? Don't put me in that position, but it's not my job to then go tweet about it or put it up on my Facebook page because in the end, that's your private life. And I may not like you as a person, but I can't judge what you do on the field based on what you do off of it.
but baseball players in an infinitely more better
right.
position.
Right, the lifestyle is conducive to it.
If Ryan Braun were like Ryan Braun, the Jamba Juice employee, I doubt.
Right. They might think he's a really cute Jamba Juice employee, though. I mean, they might go back for more Jamba Juice just because Ryan Braun works there, even if it's not the real Ryan Braun, if you, you know.
I've heard more women refer to themselves as the future Mrs. Ryan Braun.
You know, it's funny because it's like, I realize that these guys pick this life. This is a life that they choose. They choose to be in the public eye. They choose to make millions of dollars based on fan adoration and loyalty. But at the same time, I also truly believe in giving these guys a little bit of privacy. You know, it becomes a burden. It becomes a real, you know, we've seen this spike in social anxiety disorders and depression in baseball. And I think that the reason, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I would think part of the rise in this is the rise of living in a fishbowl. It's not like being, you know, Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio, those kind of guys used to go out and get hammered and do all this stuff. But unless a paper and a camera was there, nobody saw it. It was all wives' tales and hearsay and, you know, folklore. Now, you know, if Ryan Braun isn't careful and he's walking down the street and he's holding the hand of somebody that someone thinks isn't his girlfriend, you know, even if him and his girlfriend broke up, or Ryan's got one beer in his hand and he has one beer, but somebody takes a picture of that and splashes it all over the internet, suddenly Ryan's a drunk and he's not hitting well because he's out drinking and partying. I mean, you don't have to do anything wrong in this day and age. So I can understand that where that anxiety and that you know, that panic comes from, where you feel like everything you do is wrong. It's a weird existence for these guys.
I have a female friend of mine, and we were walking out of a Madison Mallards game once, and they have the players stand out there and, like, shake hands. And she said that she thinks it's actually a plot that they designed baseball pants to make women want to pinch them in the butt. So I don't know if...
You know, I'll have to look more closely. I try not to do that because I like to be taken seriously in my profession. But, you know, maybe next time I'm at a Brewers game and I'm just having a beer and I'm not working, maybe I'll check out the Bucks and see if it's true.
So I read
phenomenal.
That,
and yes, and I feel bad because I haven't spoken to her about since I moved here. And I feel like I should email her and talk to her.
Well, this excites me because I actually have a lot of
I met her in... Oh, God, it must have been, I think...
How did this all come about?
2000 or 2001, I was covering a Bears-Packers game in Chicago. Excuse me. Oh, there's a ladybug on my ceiling. You can keep that in because that's like random fun stuff. Life in New York, random lady has been on a cockroach.
Sure. Life in New York. Could be worse.
So I'm in Chicago, and I'm, you know, talking about the game with someone who's sitting next to me and taking notes and, you know, frantically getting ready for post-game. And, you know, Leslie, I'm looking at her, and I'm starstruck, and she says, can I ask you something? And I said, sure. And I'm kind of scared because I'm thinking, oh, great, I said something wrong or did something stupid, and she's going to call me out for it. And she said, are you in print or are you on television? And I said, well, I'm in television. And she said, oh, good. She said, you have a great look for TV. She said, well, where are you working? And asked me about myself and asked me what my goals were, and I told her, and she gave me her card, and she said, listen, she said, you know, I just overheard you talking about the game. She said, you seem like you have a good head on your shoulders. If there's anything I could ever do to help you out, here's my card. Please call me or email me with any questions you ever have. And she was phenomenal. From that point on, we have exchanged emails. And she no longer, unfortunately, lives in New York. Her and Dick have moved full-time to Florida. So I haven't had the opportunity to, like, just grab coffee with her in the city or anything. But I'm hoping once we get close to football season and she comes up to do some things for CBS that we can meet up and hang out. And I actually heard from a friend of mine who was covering the Super Bowl when the Steelers were in it, that he actually ran into Leslie and they figured out that they both knew me. And he said that she was raving about me and she was so proud that I took the job at MLB. And it's, you know, she's just she's one of the rare, just great women in the business who worked their way up from, you know, writing in the newspaper to working her way up to television. And, you know, to the best of my knowledge, did everything the right way. And she's just a really classy woman. I can't say enough great things about her.
I was a basketball manager at the University of Utah, and this was probably about 1995 or so. And
awesome.
You know, Rick Majerus was the head coach at the time, and my job as manager was pretty much just to do whatever he told me to do. So You know, it's a Wisconsin connection. So one day during practice, he hands me this piece of paper. He's got an interview to do. He's like, call this number and tell Leslie to hold on for me. So I take this number. It says Leslie Visser on it. So I have to go, and I call the number. It's whatever number. She's staying at a hotel in the area or something. And I get her on the phone. I'm like, Mrs. Visser, I'm Chris, and, you know, I'm just a manager here, and I'm supposed to keep you on the phone until, you know, he deems it necessary to come talk to you, which could be, you know, 15 minutes, could be a half hour. So I'm sitting there with her on the phone. I just expected to just kind of hang on the line. But she starts talking to me, and she's like, so, you know, what are you majoring in, and how are things going? And she starts asking me all these questions, and I'm, you know, I'm just a manager. I'm a complete nobody, but she seemed genuinely interested in, you know, what I was doing and what I was interested in and all that stuff. And it just, you know, even like 15 years
just
later, I so appreciate her taking the time.
That gesture, like those kind of gestures are the things that, like, now when I meet interns at work or PAs, I take a genuine interest in everyone I work with because of the way Leslie took a genuine interest. I was a nobody. I was a number three reporter at the CBS affiliate in Milwaukee. You know, for all she knew, she had never seen my work. I could have been terrible. You know, I could have been, you know, a deer in headlights in front of a camera, but she didn't care because she just was like, you know what? This girl seems like she knows sports, and if I can help her out in any way, I'm going to help her out. You know, I'm going to be there for her. And that left such an indelible mark on me, that just that she's always so open and, like, willing to help people. And I don't think she even realizes how many people she's touched so slightly. That, you know what, when we hang up on this, I'm going to email her and tell her about this conversation, because it's mm-hmm. times like these that I feel like I have to tell her what a great person she is, because she's just been such, I mean, just such an inspiration to not just women in the business, but everybody, just the way that she's just such a great person.
Okay. Well, certainly appreciate you.
I hope this leaves a mark on you. I hope you think, you know, when I push you over trying to get a beer at Miller Park, and you're like, who is that? Who does she think she is? And you're like, oh, that's okay. Attorney was nice. She talked to me. She can push me out of line for a beer.
We're all here in Wisconsin. We're cheering for you.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
We'll talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Sensation.